unsurpassed, penetrating, and perfect Dharma is rarely met with, even in 100,000 million kalpas. Having it to see and listen to remember and accept, I vow to taste the truth of the Tathagata's words. Good morning.
Morning.
It's finally hitting me. Nona died. I don't know. You know, he's a rock. I haven't seen him in a long time. I when we dedicated service this morning, I said that already. I think that he's been ill for a long time. He retired many years ago, and so he hasn't been to an American Zen Teachers Association meeting in, I don't know, 10 years. It all sort of blurs together. I can't believe that I've been going to those meetings for 20 years. He was a wonderful teacher. I've been reading some of his Dharma talks online, and I forget. And he used to have a newsletter called Prairie Wind, and he'd have poems in it, and they were really good. I see too many that people write from the heart, and they're very moving. However, they don't understand, for example, that how you lay out a poem and how you punctuate a poem matters. And so sometimes they're E.E. Cummings, whatever. I think they were from his sangha. I don't remember. I just remember being impressed. He was pretty strict, so he may have edited them, I don't know. He was a Dharma heir of Katagiri Roshis. Nonan taught at I think it's just called the Nebraska Zen Center. The organization that he founded was called Prairie Wind, and that was the name of his newsletter. He was in Omaha, and his principal disciple, his Dharma heir, was in Pittsburgh. Her name is Kyoki. And I met him first at an AZTA meeting. He was in the Soto Zen in our school, but he didn't bother much with the Soto Zen Buddhist Association. And he loved the American Zen Teachers Association. And he was one of the leaders of what I considered my gang. He and the other leader to me was Kyogen Carlson, who also died, six, 8 years ago, something like that. So Gyokuko is Kyogen's widow, and she was a member of that gang also. And I first, before I ever met Nonin, he and a woman who is a Korean Zen teacher, another wonderful teacher, her name is Judy Reitman, and she lives in Lawrence, Kansas, which is a university town, by the way. At any rate, somebody started a thread about Orioki, and it was very sincere, and it was a real question about how people did, I don't know what. And Judy, another member of that gang, by the way, in what I call scofflaws, Judy wrote that the person was forgetting the Midwestern version of Orioki, which was how to eat a hamburger And I don't remember what exactly she said. And I think it had something to do with ketchup or not ketchup. I don't know. Anyway, she said she just, you know, punctured the seriousness of the discussion. And then the next thing came from Nonin, and he started out, and I don't know if you guys are old enough to remember this, he started out, "Judy, Judy, Judy." And then he corrected her method of eating a hamburger. I don't remember if it was like no ketchup, or whether it was okay to lick your fingers, or whether it was required to lick fingers. But does everybody know that what Judy, Judy, Judy is? Anybody not know? Oh, okay. Yeah. It's a famous line that apparently Cary Grant never actually used. You know, he never said it until he was quoted as saying it, and then from then on it became like a running joke for him. So he was supposed to have said, I guess in some movie, "Judy, Judy, Judy." And I saw, I was looking to make sure it was Cary Grant, and I came across a little video where he was talking about it to an audience, and he said, you know, I never actually said that, but I've learned it because I get asked so many times to say it, or somebody will come up to me and say, "You'll never guess my wife's name." He bets them a dollar that he does know, and of course it's Judy. And of course he says, "Judy, Judy, Judy." So that was the reference, but you have to be of a certain age, I think, to know the reference. But I fell in love with both of them just online. I just thought, oh, I like these people. They're irreverent. And both of them, each of them take their practice really seriously. And then I met them at the next conference, and turned out that a small group of people, usually there's at least one free evening during those conferences, and there was a certain small group of people, what I call the scofflaws, who would go out and have a drink. I say scofflaws because there were those who didn't appreciate it, who were afraid that, you know, if it was at their temple, they were, I don't know what they thought we were going to do, but they were afraid we might go out and get drunk and embarrass the temple. We didn't get drunk. At any rate, those were my people. And we still do that, but it's much diminished without Kyogen and Nonin. And he liked bourbon, by the way, as do I. And I just heard back from, I wrote to Kyoki last night, and I just heard back from her this morning, and she appreciated what I wrote. And then she said that I was one of his favorites. And a part of me wants to say, I know. But also, I'm just pleased. Nonin studied in Japan for a while. And if you ever read David Chadwick's book, which you should, it's called, the title I think is called "Thank You and Okay, the Memoir of a Zen Failure," or something like that. It's a little bit of a boast. David Chadwick is the person who wrote Crooked Cucumber. And so it's a slightly fictionalized, I think basically he just changed names of his time in Japan. And I guess Nonin gave him a hard time. Nonin was already practicing at the temple where David went. And so I think he got a little hazed. I'm not sure. I never asked Nonin about it. And he could be difficult. He'd So sad. He'd get defensive, or he'd get bound up in making an argument, and then he would say things that he regretted. And there's one that I remember pretty clearly. Somebody from California, not me, somebody else. I won't name them. Anyway, they said something or another, and he responded, and he said something about, you know, some more of that California touchy-feely crap, close enough. He might not have said crap, but he sure did. He was very dismissive and contemptuous of whatever that person had said. And I called him on it, which I was wont to do. And then we started arguing, and I guess I kind of liked it. He'd just start yelling, so then I'd yell back. And we'd yell at each other. And it wasn't so great, but and I always felt like, why am I the one? You know, there's like people are, here's, and now I sound like, no, people are just chicken shit to take him on. And somebody once said, oh, well, Mary can stand up to him. And I thought, hey, where are you? You know, you think it's easy? Because it wasn't easy. I mean, there was a way in which it was kind of fun, but it was also hard and sometimes painful. And then somewhere in there, he would calm down and usually apologize. And some people were afraid of him, and some people just didn't like him because they were a little afraid of him. And I guess I wasn't. And I just could see, you could just feel his heart, and he tried to apologize to the person from California, and they just kind of turned it back on him. They wouldn't come. He and I were sitting on a couch during a break, and they wouldn't come to join the conversation or anything, which was too bad. And he was a wonderful calligrapher, and he donated, I think there were 4 calligraphies, and we put some of them in the auction, and I thought it was only 2, but I can only find 1, and 1 I understand that Dave Delaney has, who, Lisa, I don't think you knew Dave, but he was a regular, he was a great baker, too. He baked Buddha's birthday cake. Anyway, he's a Facebook friend, and I tried what I could think of to reach him, but I didn't. So, but we have 1, and I'd like Kelly to show it. And can you take the, there's a card tucked into a little pocket in the back. Okay, can you read what the translation? Okay, what that says is, I think that's enough. Oh, you can see it. Practice and realization are one and the same. Practice and realization are one and the same. I don't want to lose the card because I can't read that. Well, I can read 1. Leung, his 1 actually goes up a little bit. And it doesn't really look, I don't know. I think we did at least as well on the 1. I'm not so sure about the other things. We practiced calligraphy together for a while. And it took a lot. I just worked. Liam's an artist, so anyway, for whatever reason, he was better at it than I am. But I worked on just doing a 1, which is just that essentially a straight line. But oh, I don't know, it took a long time, and I remember finally getting one, and of course crowing about it. Anyway, he was a master calligrapher. And I would imagine that he studied it when he was in Japan, because he was there for a while. And then he received Dharma transmission from Katagiri in 1989, towards the end of the year, I think in December, along with, I don't know, 11 or 12 other people. And Katagiri died in, I don't know, January, I think, of 90, might have been February, but really early in 90. So this Dharma transmission was kind of the last thing that he did, and Nonin was one of many. The only one that you might have heard of is Yvonne Rand, who also died. She died last year. So Nonin loved poetry, and he quoted poetry a lot. He loved ryokan, which is entirely understandable and appropriate. And one of his, I guess it's a talk. I don't know, there's no title for this, whatever. So it looks like, I don't know, anyway. He gave a talk about ryokan, and I had found something particular. He would read a poem and then comment about it. And this might have been an article in Prairie Wind rather than a talk. I don't know. It says, Ryokan frequently wrote about different aspects of Zen Buddhist practice. Here's one of these poems. And bear in mind, what is it? Practice and enlightenment are not two. They're close enough to what that clearly says. So here's one of those poems. Talk is always easy. Practice always hard. It's no wonder people try to make up for their lack of hard practice with easy talk. But the harder they try, the worse things get. The more they talk, the more wrong they go. It's like pouring on oil to put out a fire. Just foolishness and nothing else. Just foolishness. And Nonin's comment is, Zen Buddhist practice is about doing the work, not about talking about it. But that doesn't stop people from doing so. I'm active on the Zen Buddhist internet forum, and a large number of people, quote, try to make up for the lack of hard practice with easy talk, close quote. In fact, many of them don't practice at all, but yet they try to come across as experts. Sometimes I think of the above poem and want to post it when one of these people is pontificating, but I restrain myself. But he didn't. In Zen, we say that reading and talking about Zen Buddhism is like going to a restaurant and eating the menu. A person can receive no sustenance in this way. You can't awaken to your own true nature by reading or talking about other people's experiences. In Soto Zen Buddhism, we need to sit zazen regularly, practice under the guidance of a teacher, and connect with and practice with a group. There's no way around this. So practice and realization are one and the same, I think is what he actually said. And of course, they are. Practice and enlightenment are one. That's Dogen's teaching. They're not two separate things. You know, Dogen went to Japan with this big question of that everybody's going around doing the easy talk, I guess, and saying, Oh, yes, you're already Buddha. You're Buddha. You're of the nature of Buddha. And he kept thinking, well, then why do I bother practicing? So he went to China, and he wound up meeting Ru Jing, his teacher, and he came away with the understanding that practice is enlightenment because it illuminates our true nature. I don't know if he would have said it exactly like that. We practice in order to express it. But they're not really even that separate, I think. Practice enlightenment is one and the same. Sometimes we say practice hyphen enlightenment. One time, Reb was experimenting during a sesshin at Tassajara, and he was doing these little, I guess, Rinzai kind of things you go in and he just have a brief question, like a shosan question, really, and then you're just supposed to answer. And then he actually would ring a bell. I don't know. I got a bell. I don't know. There used to be a radio show called, I don't know what it was. Maybe it was a hit parade. And if the record was liked, it got a bell of some sort. And if it was disliked, it got an Anyway, I don't know what he did, if anything. But I walk in and I sit down and he says, what is enlightenment? And just from the depths of my gut came practice. And I said it. It was like pulled out of me. I didn't think about it. And if I thought about it, I might have said that because I knew what Dogen said. I knew what the line was. But this was, I had internalized it, and I didn't know I had until that happened. But that assertion begs the question, what is practice? And of course it's Zazen, but what else is it? You could sit Zazen and dream away the whole time, or not bother noticing that you're thinking and coming back to your breath and your body. We all do that some of the time, but we have the intention to come back to the breath and the body. We have the intention to let go of discursive thinking. We have the intention not to indulge or wallow in emotion. I don't mean at all to repress it, but not to hold on to it, not to obsess. And I think that's a major part of practice, that just letting go and letting go and letting go, and that habit of paying great attention and letting go, inhabiting your body. We have the intention not to indulge or wallow in emotion. I don't mean at all to repress it, but not to hold on to it, not to obsess. And I think that's a major part of practice, that just letting go and letting go and letting go, and that habit of paying great attention and letting go and inhabiting your body. That's a description of practice. And it sure is, when you are holding on to something, or when you owe amends to somebody, when you let go, when you make the amends, you could say that's enlightenment, that the feeling of ease and lightness that comes when you do let go. And that's not, that's sometimes very difficult. Sometimes it involves looking at things you really don't want to look at. I've been having another round of looking at my critical nature. I wrote about it on the blog, but at any rate, and what comes up immediately is, yeah, 2 days late. Shut up. And it's not pleasant. It's a lot easier than it used to be, and it doesn't, you know, I'm not critical of myself for being critical. Except just then when I said shut up. And that's, I think, Nonin and Dogen are pointing at that. That our practice is paying attention, and our practice is developing the habit of paying attention and developing the habit of not clinging, developing the habit of not, as Bumper Strip, of not believing everything you think. Developing the habit of encouraging that beach ball of a self to deflate down to a cantaloupe. When the self isn't quite so big, then I can let go much more easily because it's not any longer defining who I am. So probably on that calligraphy that Kelly showed you, it's probably practice enlightenment one same. I bet that's how it reads, but I could look up practice and enlightenment. I have a book for names. I'm very bad at looking things up in the Japanese, a character dictionary. There's a system to it. But we think that enlightenment is some big thing out there or some spectacular experience. And it can be, or there can be such experiences, but I think I started to say real enlightenment. I don't know if I want to make such a distinction, but I think enlightenment deeply is finding ease in navigating your life because you have that habit of letting go, of not taking yourself so seriously that you can't apologize or you can't meet somebody, you can't see them because you're so busy formulating your response or worrying about how you look on Zoom. I know people that won't use a video on Zoom because they don't like how they look on Zoom. I mean, we all do look at ourselves on Zoom. I think that's one of the unfortunate things that happens. But to be so bound up in it that you can't even be one small picture on a screen with 20 other people, you have to ask yourself, what is that? Well, you don't have to, but I'd suggest that you should. So the thought of to practice is to put your intention on it, to make the effort. We say sometimes, I need to practice with that. My friend Miao Leahy and I used to, just have a hard time with each other. We didn't yell at each other like Nonin and I did, but we sort of missed each other. We had a great deal of affection for each other at the same time, but we were on practice committee together and whatever. He lived at City Center, and so we bumped into each other, and I suggested to him once that we should sit down and talk, and he said, no, He said, let's just practice with it. And so I said, okay, I didn't have a choice, right, if he didn't want to talk about it. But I did, and I really turned towards it, you know, what is it that is triggered here? What is it that's impatient with him, or what, you know, what's my part in this? And I don't remember what I realized in the process, but something or another, and I could see that he was working with it also, and our relationship changed. It got much easier. So we practiced with it. And it's partly said, you know, putting your intention on paying attention and putting your intention on being willing to pay attention. Even when you don't want to. Or you can't be, don't forget, but putting your intention on it. And it gets easier the more zazen you do. And it gets easier the more you do it. Because you develop faith. I gave a lecture recently. And I talked about faith. Or if you want this, you can say self-confidence if you want. Trust. But Nonin, quoting or referring to Dogen, really, I think, says it all. Practice, enlightenment, the same. Because that's what matters. Doing the work matters. Having a big explosion in your head. I don't know how much that matters. So, does anybody have any comments or questions? Yeah, Liam?
There's some kind of noise in the background. I'm not sure where it's coming from. Can you hear me now?
Yeah.
Okay. I just wanted to thank you for sharing Nonin. I didn't know anything about him. I'd heard the name, and I think I would have enjoyed meeting him if I'd had the chance. Sounds like
Yeah. Something
I would have appreciated. And the calligraphy was quite beautiful.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah. Well, if you guys are interested, I can send you a link to that, to the piece about the Ryokan. There's a bunch of poems that he comments on.
Yeah, I like that.
Anybody else? Yeah, Kate.
Yeah, I'll second that. Thank you for sharing about Nonin. I had not heard of him. I'd seen the calligraphy without knowing that was his, but I enjoyed hearing about him and your friendship with him. And for some reason, I picked up some, I've been re-looking at some lectures compiled by Charlotte Joko Beck's daughter of hers. It's in a nice collection called Ordinary Wonder. And one of the things in the lecture she said about enlightenment was, enlightenment is not desiring things to be different than they are, or something like that. And that really struck me. I guess if I would have heard that when I first came to sit, I'd like, well, I don't know about that. But I've been sitting with that, because mostly I get distracted both in sitting and in my life by wanting things to be different. I want to feel differently. I want someone else to be doing something differently. I want to feel peaceful when I sit, which I thought was the point. And I do sometimes, but I also lately have been really uncomfortable for a little while now. And so I'm sitting with that. And hopefully one day I will not want things to be different than they are. But I find that when I mean, I've had an experience of that where I fight so hard, or I try really hard, and that's not it. You know, I thought if I tried really hard, that would make me better or something like that, or then I would achieve something.
Wouldn't it be pretty to think so?
Yeah. But something's shifting, and it feels different. And I think it's about, you know, in the 12-step program, they say, you know, acceptance is the answer to all my problems. Yeah. So it's kind of the same thing, not wanting, just showing up right now on my seat, in my chair, as I speak, you know, when I go inside and make the bed. It's ordinary. And I think for a long time I wanted it not to be. Ordinary is pretty wonderful, actually, sometimes.
Yeah.
So that's it. I would enjoy seeing Nonan's lectures and things.
Well, I'll just send it out. I'll just send it out for the whole distance, and then I don't have to try to remember who said they wanted it. It's useful to explore that wanting, Kate, because there's a basic wanting. I want to exist in some sort of permanent way. There's a real basic longing, and then we take that want and we put it on shiny red objects, some of us, and whatever. So get to know wanting. Anybody else?
These are numberless, I vow to save them. Delusions are inexhaustible, I vow to end them. Karma gates are boundless, I vow to enter them. Buddha's way is unsurpassable, I vow to become it. Beings are numberless, I vow to save them. Delusions are inexhaustible, I vow to end them. Dharma gates are boundless, I vow to enter them. Buddha's way is unsurpassable, I vow to become it. Beings are numberless, I vow to save them. Delusions are inexhaustible, I vow to end them. Dharma gates are boundless, I vow to enter them. Buddha's way is unsurpassable, I vow to become it.